province, he began. The only way to reach this town was by airplane. There were no roads into it at all, and no hotels. So while the crew is working up there, they live with families in the area. The couple they were staying with was really nice, and at the end of the job, the company, as a bonus, offered to fly them to Florida for an all-expenses-paid week-long vacation. The man laughed, recalling what happened next. The couple turns it down, he explained. They say, but we don't know anyone in Florida. Why would we want to go there? So we ask them if there is some place they would rather go instead, and they name this town that was about 20 minutes away by plane. They had friends there they hadn't seen in a while, and that's what we did. We flew them to this nearby town, and the couple spent a week with their friends, and then we flew them home again. They said it was the best vacation they had ever been on. That's the kind of folks newfies are. He then added, and you know what happened there on September 11th? There are a few things everyone should know about Newfoundland. First and foremost is how to pronounce it correctly. Few things are likely to make a native of this province surly faster than mispronouncing their homeland, a fact I was reminded of several times. Newfoundland is not enunciated as if it were three distinct words, as in Newfoundland, nor is it pronounced as if it were somehow a Scandinavian colony, as in Newfoundland. Instead, it is Newfoundland. The key is to say it very fast. One fellow offered me a simple mnemonic device. Understand Newfoundland. The words rhyme and the cadence is similar. Over the centuries, Newfoundlanders have developed a style and language distinctively their own, an amalgam of working-class English and Irish, although in lilt and tone, it leans a bit more toward the Irish. The people who originally settled here were not wealthy or well-educated. They came for the fish. They were from towns along the southern coast of England, Plymouth and Bristol and Poole, and the west coast of Ireland, places like Ballybunion and Waterville and Galway. Once they decided to stay in Newfoundland, they created their own style of speech that lives to this day, especially in the smaller outpost towns along the coast. It is more Shakespearean than contemporary. Sentences often end with the phrase, "me dear" and "me lovely." Newfoundlanders employ an almost continuous third-person present tense in their speech. A phrase such as, "I am a fisherman," would be, "I is a fisherman," or since Newfoundlanders contract "I is" into the single word "eyes," which sounds like "eyes," the phrase becomes "eyes be a fisherman." The contractions are often a product of the speed with which they speak. The smaller the town, the faster the talk. There is even something called the Dictionary of Newfoundland English, a massive and definitive tome, which is now in its second edition and runs 847 pages. It is also helpful to remember that Newfoundland is in a world of its own, or at least its own time zone. Newfoundland is precisely 1 hour and 30 minutes ahead of U.S. Eastern Standard Time. So, when it is 10 a.m. in New York, it is 11:30 a.m. in Gander. When it is noon in Los Angeles, it's 4:30 p.m. in the provincial capital of St. John's. No one else in the world is on Newfoundland time other than Newfies, which, in a way, is appropriate. Newfoundlanders are fiercely proud of their history and remain independent in their identity as Newfoundlanders first and Canadians second. A part of the British Empire since John Cabot landed there in 1497, Newfoundland only became a part of Canada in 1949. The margin of the popular vote in the referendum to join Canada as its last province was so slim that older Newfoundlanders still question the legitimacy of the election. Even today, many Newfoundlanders believe the central government in Ottawa has robbed them of their natural resources and cheated them out of financial well-being. Newfoundland has an unemployment rate of more than 16%, the highest in Canada. Its timber industry is mostly gone. Its mines are quickly becoming empty, and the fishing industry, once the lifeblood of Newfoundland, has been decimated, they believe, by the policies of the central government, which prevents small local fisheries from operating, but signs treaties to allow foreign trawlers with their massive nets to literally scrape the bottom of the Grand Banks and carry off the province's bounty.